Say hi, DJ.
Hi, Javi.
Say hi to the fiends, DJ.
Hi, fiends.
Hi, fiends. Here we go. Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. I am Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, also known as
the Iron Hamster.
TJ and Davi are both saying at the same time. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Mr. Davi Barker, the shiny badger. Are you well? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government, Davi?
I have not been contacted by the government. I have also not been contacted by extraterrestrials from Alpha Centauri. It's kind of a race right now. My money is on the aliens from Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, I wish they'd get here.
But yeah, I'm in good spirits.
Why? Why are you in good spirits?
I've had a good day. I got a lot done. Went for a good run. And, you know, I've been unplugged from the mainstream media for about 24 hours, and that always helps me clear my thoughts and, you know, relax and get those, you know, endorphins and everything in balance.
Talk to your friend Blake Anderson.
Yeah, I had a long chat with my friend Blake Anderson.
Yeah, I like shout outs to one person, like nobody listening to syndicated radio knows on syndicated radio. It seems like such something you don't do with syndicated radio, you know?
Well, apparently we do.
Yeah. There's a 30 Rock. You ever watch 30 Rock?
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, there's a 30 Rock where Jack and Lemon go to some town in Arkansas to look for a new comedian for the show. And it's, you know, they're painting into some backwoods town. And they're watching the local news. And it's like, and in other news today, Marie is going out of town in hopes that Bill will go over and water her cat, her plants and feed her cats, like on the nightly news. And she's like, man, this is really local news. Yeah. So, what did I do today? Not that no one knows who Blake Anderson is. He's kind of a well-known guy in our community, but probably not a lot of people listening to talk radio in Paducah, Kentucky at 1 a.m. or in Belle Fouche, South Dakota, or Sundance, Wyoming at 11 o'clock at night know who he is.
Well, then they should Google him.
Yeah.
He's like a mind-altering substance. It's like if you were to take like an amphetamine and a psychedelic and wrap them up together, sort of like an Oreo cookie or maybe like a peanut butter cup. That's what hanging out with Blake Anderson is like.
Okay, I want to do some of that, so I'm going to add him on Facebook to make this even more. This isn't even really local news anymore. It's like, this is Michael on his Facebook page.
This is local internet news.
Yeah.
Today on the internet, as you can see here.
Yes. Yes. This is Blake Anderson, sole proprietor at Bitcoin. Would that be him?
That's him.
Yeah. He runs Bitcoin. I've heard of this Bitcoin. Yeah, this is kind of the equivalent of what Glenn Beck was doing today. Like, DJ told me she was listening to Glenn Beck, and we decided, like, man, he is really out of ideas. Like, you know, he wasn't talking about beheadings. He wasn't talking about what Obama's done to you today. He was like talking about autofill in Google and the silly things it comes up with.
That's a pretty fun topic.
I've said it's kind of like that's kind of more Freedom Fiends than Glenn Beck. He must just have, you know, he's just given up. Or there's some radio consultant who's like listening to the Freedom Fiend somewhere and going, you know, I think this is where, because we have a liner that says Freedom Fiends, this is what radio sounds like now. And it's got like this trance music playing over like a death clock kind of drum loop. And maybe they think this is what radio sounds like now. So maybe Glenn Beck is going to start talking about how the aliens are going to come from Alpha Centauri and bring a libertarian paradise to Earth. I doubt
it's going to happen. I know it. One of the fun ones for the autofill is to just put in your name, like Michael W. Dean is A, and see what happens.
And that means people have searched that before.
I'm not really sure how it's derived, but for me, it came up. Davi is a privateer. which is sort of like, I'd never heard of that word, but it's apparently it's some kind of pirate.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's a pretty good answer. You know, like, especially like having the word private in pirate is sort of like, yeah, I'm a private property guy. It makes perfect sense. I want to sail off into the sea where there's freedom from the king. Absolutely.
I can't say on the radio what the autofill says when you type Michael W. Dean is a... So, yeah, we were going to talk about some memes and things today. You know, who's the guy that came up with the term meme? Was it Dawkins, Richard Dawkins, the other Dawkins?
Yeah, I think it was Richard Dawkins. Yeah. And it was the idea that it was the mental version of a meme. And he was sort of looking at ideas as if they were viruses that propagate through human brains.
No, he coined the term meme and said it was the mental version of a virus. To most people now, a meme means a stupid
a picture with some words on it
that travels on the internet. No, yeah. He coined the term meme before that was a thing. And he actually recently got really upset at some interviewer who asked him what he thought of meme pictures on the internet. And he's like, I coined that term to mean, you know, vast sweeps in an increase of knowledge throughout the history of mankind. The stuff on the internet is completely the opposite. And I thought of the iron, how ironic that is.
That is like, so ironic. He's totally
like,
wrong.
He is. Here's the thing. He's basically saying like, he's basically thinking up this, it's a smart guy coming up with a cool word for something that drives human knowledge. And then when it gets used on playful human knowledge that's not necessarily that important, he gets mad. Like, basically, he coins a word about the spread of information and then gets upset about that, how that word spreads to describe the spread of information.
But it is exactly what he's talking about. It is not just the spreading of information in human knowledge. It is encapsulating that knowledge and spreading that information in the most condensed form possible.
Yeah.
One picture, one sentence, and not even a complete sentence. Like, he should be proud that they've been called memes.
His reaction to it sounded really cranky. It was like, I was almost wondering if he was going to like start issuing DMCA takedown notices on everyone who makes internet memes.
Maybe he'll demand a royalty every time you use the word meme. But yeah, memetics is the term for the industry or for the field. It's really interesting. Aside from just memes themselves being interesting, studying memetics and like the way that things mutate in the brain and transmit to other people, it's a very interesting way of thinking about knowledge.
Blurp.
Blurp.
Blurp. That wasn't me just saying, that wasn't a reaction like, yeah, whatever. It was more like, that's kind of how things travel, at least in my brain. Blurp. You know, like when the tubes of the internet or the tubes of your brain like get too much information, it kind of gets backed up, and then all of a sudden it breaks through and goes blurp into the other part of the brain or the internet.
Yeah, but it also means that, it kind of means that you're sort of like a host to a variety of parasitic ideas that are just using your brain for storage until they can move somewhere else. You're like a server that people have left their ideas on.
Do you like that movie Johnny Mnemonic?
Johnny Mnemonic? Yeah, it's like The Matrix in high school.
It's like The Matrix in high school before special effects could be done very well. Yeah, I dig old science fiction because it's, or, you know, not old, but like when I was a kid, science fiction, because it's so quaint, but it's still a good story, you know, and it's still a good concept of like using a human brain as a courier. And also it's like, you know, the amount of memory storage that was in his brain was something ridiculous. It was like something low, like 500 megabytes or something. Like,
you know. Like why would you bother at that point? Right. Like you can put that in a QR code.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what else is really Matrix in high school is the movie Hackers. Have you ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
If you go through the characters, you can literally parallel the plot and the characters directly to the Matrix.
I really liked the movie the movie War Games, and I thought it was pretty sophisticated.
Oh, yeah.
And had a great message for something so early on. Like, that was made before most people had ever touched a computer, too.
Yeah. I remember, like, people in the movie were like, what is this internet you speak of?
Internet? Yeah.
And they're like, you mean your computer uses the phone? Like, it's pretty funny, but Yeah, for sure. And the overall message of it was really powerful too. Like just the idea that there is no winner in a war game.
Yeah, yeah.
Is sort of that's a powerful meme.
It is a powerful meme, and yeah. Well, doesn't it take place on Bainbridge Island? The end of it.
I don't know. Yeah. Wouldn't it be the Pentagon? No,
because they have to like go find the scientist that designed the war game computer to ask him how to turn it off, basically. Remember?
Mm-hmm. This is Oregon Island.
Oregon Island? Are you reading?
That's what it says on Wikipedia.
Oh, okay. I don't know. But yeah. Yeah, and it's like, you know, some scientist that designed the whole thing and is retired and hidden from existence. Like,
tell me there's a back door. Tell me about the back door.
Yeah, and it's like his late son's name or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Man, I haven't seen that movie in forever. I should go back and watch it again. It's a classic. They're going to reboot it, and they're going to destroy it.
You know, this is kind of weird synchronicity. Nima Vedati. Let me just type to Nima Vedati. We're talking about Auto Autophil right now on The Fiends. Nima Vedati, who started this show with me and then retired to go make babies, just typed, I don't know if he's listening or not tonight, but he just typed on his Facebook, "I feel offended when I type something in and my thoughts don't autofill, even when it's something that shouldn't, like Facebook posts. The interwebs has spoiled me."
That would get pretty crazy if everything autofilled all the time. Because like eventually you start to think, am I having the wrong thought? What if the autofill is correct?
I'll bet the Department of Defense is working on some way to reprogram humans' brains. So, you know, when you start thinking, I don't like the government, you know, it like changes it to, I don't like string cheese or something.
I don't like the government's lack of influence in the financial sector.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when I see, I can't spell to save my life on my own, but I can see misspelled.
Luckily, that scenario rarely comes up.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I, you know, I'm 50 years old and I grew up before computers were common and I couldn't spell. And I had an English teacher tell me when I was 14, you're a really good writer, but you'll never make a living at it because you can't spell. But when I see, when I look at a page, I see the typos like almost underlined, like the way that spell check would. On a piece of paper, even. We'll be back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Dobby Barker,
Michael W. Dean.
You want to talk about war games? War were declared, and it's a game. Do you know what that's from? War were declared.
No.
It's a Futurama where Fry and Bender join the army to get a 10% discount so they can buy pork flavored gum cheaper. And you know, the general that's signing them up is like, yep, there you go, there's your discount card. And they're like, all right, so we don't really have to like do anything, right? And he's like, nope, not unless war were declared. And then these alarms start going off and they're like, what's that? And he says, war were declared. So War Games, the movie that we grow up being terrified by. Were you terrified by it? How old were you when you saw it?
I must have been a little kid.
Yeah.
I guess I wasn't, I mean, I wasn't scared watching it, but I did sort of like live in fear of the bomb as an elementary school kid. Like, I remember that hanging over me. Like, why am I sitting in class right now and we could all blow up in another 10 minutes and not even know it?
Yeah, it's a 1983. They actually did a remake of it in 2001. Which
really?
Yeah, which really didn't. Was that it? No, they made a they made a remake of Hackers. That was it.
Really?
Yeah. Wait, what?
What?
You've been so busy making movie, writing science fiction that you haven't been keeping up on it.
No, I don't want to pollute my art.
Yeah, there you go. So, War Games, yeah, 1983 American Cold War science fiction film stars Matthew Broderick, Dabney Coleman, John Wood, and Ally Sheedy.
I only know who one of those people is.
You don't know who Ally Sheedy is?
Nope. Should I?
She was the weird gothy girl in Breakfast Club, if you know Breakfast Club.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
She was my favorite.
Yeah, they're really kind of like, leave me alone. My hair's in my eyes.
My favorite thing that she did was she made dandruff or made dandruff into snow in her drawing of the house in the meadow.
You know, that movie didn't really speak to me. Did it speak to you?
Oh, yeah, big time. The Rebel and the Goth were the ones that spoke to me.
Why was that? Why did Breakfast Club speak to that generation?
Because it was everyone in that generation.
Because you were one of the people in it, and everyone you knew was one of the other people in it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the way that children's programming was marketed in the 80s. This is why there's four Ninja Turtles. This is why, you know, there's four Ghostbusters. It's because they're always aiming for every archetype in the audience has an identifiable character. You can find this in the Goonies. You can find this everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they took all of the sort of common tropes and cliques in high school at the time, and they said, we're going to make every one of you into a star.
Yeah. You know, I think it didn't speak to me, too, because I'm a little old for it, because I was born in 64. So let's see. Well, it should speak to you if you're about the same age as the actors in it. So let's see. Ally Sheedy was born in, was shorn in... 62. Whoa. No, wait. That should totally speak to me. I was born in 64. When were you born?
Well, no, because actors play characters younger than themselves.
You know why they do that?
So she was like 25 when she was in that role, but she was playing a 16-year-old girl, right?
Yeah, because younger actors are insane and can't be dealt with and don't take direction.
They also don't look like the age that they are. If you took like actual 16-year-olds and put them on a movie screen, they look too young to be 16.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Because the camera takes off 10 years.
Yeah. I was born in 81.
Mm.
So I was also, I mean, we've talked about this before. I grew up on movies older than my generation, right? Because my parents recorded everything on VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And so I was both enculturated and encountered this movie at an age younger than most people.
Enculturated? Is that a word?
I just made it up if it's not. I just mean like the cultural references in the Breakfast Club hit me, even though they might not have hit other people my age, because I was a good 5 to 10 years behind them as far as the cultural inputs that I had.
Enculturation is an existing word, but I think we should co-opt it and make it popular.
Does it have something to do with bacteria?
No. It's the process by which people learn the requirements of their surrounding culture. I think we should use that in kind of a meme liberty sense of what we're doing is we're enculturation without saturation or enculturation with something, you know, maybe
without indoctrination.
Yeah. Enculturation without indoctrination.
There you go.
Without psychologization.
It's E before I.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about, tell me about, you know, your childhood, Donnie.
This reminds me of, well, this is not about my childhood, but the final scene in War Games reminds me a lot of the final scene in Doctor Strangelove, which I hadn't seen until you recommended it to me. But it's that idea of like the climax of the movie is, will the bomb go off? Right?
And it do.
And they do or they don't, you know, depending on who the scriptwriter is. But I don't feel like we get those movies anymore.
No, we get like 2-hour ads for the state.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
We need the state to save us from.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah! This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Yeah, that whole break was recorded for some reason. I think I'll put it out at the end of the show again. People really liked our post-game show the other day. Did you listen to it?
Yeah, I got some comments on it.
Yeah, me too.
I got a guy messaged me, a friend of mine messaged me to give me some sort of tips on weird stuff radio towers are capable of. So that was sort of fun.
For your sci-fi book. So
yeah.
So I don't know, Davi. I detected something in your voice there. I think maybe you've had a, you had a bad childhood.
Well, I do really like being psychoanalyzed without warning, especially in front of large audiences.
I'm going to do that. So
let me get comfortable in my.
Tell me about your childhood.
I happen to have a chair or a sofa here for just such a talk therapy session.
I'll just push you down on the sofa and put my hands up in your brain.
Yeah, mind the leather straps. you know, when I was a kid, highly abusive, I was forced for 6 hours a day to sit in a room where I was bored out of my mind and fed information that I couldn't use. And if I left, then I was put into an even more boring room where I was sort of told to sit and think about what I'd done. And so, you know, there was a woman there, not my mother, but a, you know, female figure. And she had a tendency to humiliate me if I didn't.
Are you about to get droned?
I don't know.
I heard a sound.
I live close to Moffett Field. Moffett Field occasionally does sort of weird military exercises.
Don't give out your location.
Okay.
You're supposed to be in an undisclosed location. You're in Silicon Valley. You're surrounded by where they build all of the cool chromed robot turds in our pocket and the missile guidance systems for drones and probably the satellites that we're talking over.
See, now eventually that'll just be an app that you can download onto your smartphone and it'll become a drone. Although, you know, the military targeting software and things like that, and it'll just download onto your app and then it'll be like, oh, facial recognition, this smartphone is being held by a target, and it'll explode.
I imagine that Obama's BlackBerry has a button that just says war, you know, that he just pushes when he wants to drone somebody.
It's like a mode in his settings.
There's an app for that. Yeah. Yeah, or you know, like to just take a radio show off the radio for good or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, why not? It should be completely user-friendly. I mean, too many government things are sort of they're too much IBM, not enough Mac, you know? Like it should predict. It should autofill. We would like to declare, the president has declared autofill war on wherever. It'll guess.
Have you ever seen the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley, speaking of where you live?
No.
It's a pretty funny movie. Speaking of like older movies that are really good that have to do with science, it's...
Is it anything like the pirate scene at the beginning of It's a Meaningful Life?
The pirate scene? No. It's a Wonderful Life or It's a Meaningful Life?
Oh, wait
a
minute.
It's a meme-ful life is what you're thinking of. Okay, no, Pirates of Silicon Valley is like a, I don't know, 80s movie, late 80s movie about the rise of the computer industry. There have been like 100 movies like this.
It's the meaning of life, Monty Python.
Okay, this is the meaming of life, yeah. Pirates of Silicon Valley is basically about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and their rise to power and industry. And Bill Gates is played by Anthony Michael Hall. Is that his name? Speaking of the Breakfast Club. And Noah Wiley plays the guy from Mac, the man from Apple. The man from Apple, Steve Jobs. And, you know, basically they're kind of, it's basically what really happened, but it's a little bit exaggerated. And, you know, they paint Steve Jobs as a, you know, Harvard nerd who can't get a woman to talk to him. And they paint Steve Jobs as a, you know, acid eating hippie who's dating 7 women at once and taking acid and, you know, fighting wars and making free phone call boxes and selling them out of the back of his van, which pretty much all happened. But there's kind of a, you know, he kind of had the Molyneux effect. He kind of had the thing of like where he got too popular too quick and just believed he was God. And, you know, they ended up firing him from the company he started. I don't think that can happen with Molyneux, but it's up to the market to decide on that one, to just go
no
away.
But it'd be really interesting if it did.
Yeah. But he just spun out of control and like did things like, you know, pit one side of the company against the other to like, it was destroying the company, but he thought it was healthy competition. And there's a scene in there, I don't know if this actually happened, but it probably could have happened from what I knew about Steve Jobs. It's a pretty funny scene, man. He's supposed to be interviewing a new programmer. And, you know, this is after like he's been on the cover of Newsweek magazine or Times Man of the Year or whatever. And he's being treated like a rock star. And he comes in late to interview this programmer. The programmer is in a conference room with some other high level Apple employee who's interviewing him, going like, yeah, well, Jobs is supposed to be here, but he's late. I don't know, man. He's going to be here soon. And the applicant is like wearing a black suit with a white shirt and a skinny black tie, and his hair is greased down, and he looks very proper and nerdy, and, you know, like he would have, oh, like a slide rule in his pocket, that kind of nerd. And and Steve Jobs comes in like barefoot and puts his dirty feet up on the table, and he's obviously high on something, and he's got really long hair, and he's kind of wearing like a dirty t-shirt, and he's like, you know, the guy is really impressed anyway. He's like, oh, hi, Mr. Jobs, it's good to meet you, here's my resume. And the guy starts talking about you know, about like his job experience at IBM on mainframe computers. And Jobs finally just interrupts him and says, are you a virgin? And the guy's like, excuse me? I'm sorry. Are you a virgin? And he's like, I don't understand. I've been happily married to my wife for 12 years. And he's like, yeah, I know, but like in here. And he points at his heart, at his own heart, and says, you're a virgin. And then he just walks out, like storms out of the interview.
What does that mean?
Oh, it means like, you know, Jobs was someone who thought he was connected to secret knowledge that nobody else had.
Mm.
You know, so like anybody who would come out with something called the truth about, you know.
So the opening scene in The Meaning of Life has nothing to do with the movie itself, and it's like 15 minutes.
It's the pirate scene. I love that. It's where they take over the very large corporate. They're taken over by something called the Very Large Corporation of America. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and like office buildings sail around in the desert like pirate ships and like board one another.
Yeah, and they use like the ceiling fans as swords. I have one of those rotating ceiling fans like that. I think of that movie when I lie on my bed and look up at that.
It's probably one of the most entertaining pieces of film that I've ever seen.
I like the secretary who has a pirate hat with tea bags hanging off of it.
Really?
You don't remember that?
No. Like a full-blown like tea party whatever patriot person?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I have to get a screen capture of that. My favorite is when they're sitting around and they're having their marketing meeting, and the guy has all these charts and papers, and he says, well, we've determined that people aren't wearing enough pants. And the other guy says, pants for what purpose?
For some reason, that's reminding me of the Dead Kennedys line in MTV Get Off the Air. There's a line that says something like, but sales are slumping and no one will say why. It's like, sales are slumping and no one will say why. Could it be they've put out one too many lousy records? Tin-eared graph paper brained accountants instead of music fans call all the shots at giant record companies now. So I'm going to rant a little bit about radio. I call stations. I call them up and say, hey, you know, I was thinking a few people have said that the Fiends are a cult lately for some reason. And I think we're more like a gang. Because cults actively recruit, and we're like, no.
It's definitive. We only scored 1 out of 10 on the cult on the cult meter. And even that one was disputed.
Yeah. but I was thinking, like, you know, it could be like a multi-level marketing cult. There are cults that are kind of like that, like, you know, Amway kind of. Well, I don't want to say Amway, but, you know, a thing where, like, you have to bring people in below. And I was thinking, like, I should have a new thing where if you – To become a new co-host on here, you have to go out and get us 2 radio stations. Because that's hard, man. I've only gotten 26 of them in over a year.
Yeah, I mean, but it would definitely be a value add for the show. Yeah. I mean, I guess unless you got somebody who's really good at it for some reason, but a terrible co-host.
I'd take some of those people. if there's any listening.
Okay.
But I was talking to the station in the Pacific Northwest, and it's a station I've been talking to for like a year. And I tell you, I love being on radio, but it's so, sometimes it is so frustrating for me compared to the internet. You know, it's like, if I want to put something out on the internet, I'm like, all right, you know, we made the, okay, like your authoritarian sociopathy thing. Like, you know, you wrote this book, you know, Daryl narrated it, and, you know, you made good sounding audio files of it. And you put it out. And I was like, oh, wait, hey, I'll put that on my torrent feed on the Freedom. And it's like, you know, within a day, like 10,000 people had it on their hard drives. Whereas like with radio, you call a station, you go through a list of like 700 stations and you go through the whole list. And, you know, sometimes they say, yeah, call me back in a week. Sometimes they say 2 months. Sometimes they say 6 months. And you mark it on your calendar and you call them back. And then sometimes you call them back and they're like, oh, Eli doesn't work here anymore. He's moved to Pittsburgh. And they don't immediately say who you should talk to. I'm like, well, who's his replacement? Oh, well, it's John. Can I talk to John? Oh, John's not here. You know, like you have to like
call back in a week.
It's just so old school compared to, you know, I either want radio to work like the internet, or I want to be the libertarian dictator of the world and just say, everyone's going to take the Freedom Fiends now, which isn't really how it works, but
it's a market failure. The existence of AM radio is a market failure.
No, it's
this
not.
Is why we need to centrally plan communication.
It's not a market failure. It's doing well.
It is, in fact, it is the market.
It's putting us on, so it's doing well. Yeah. Yeah, it still exists, and it's not really subsidized, so it's doing well. It's doing in the market. But, you know, I talked to this guy today, and it was one of those things where I'd been talking to a guy for, 7 months. He left, and I've been, you know, having to start over from zero with his replacement. And, you know, that took 3 or 4 months of him going back and forth. And today he was finally like, well, I finally played it. I like it a lot. I like your show a lot. You know, I played it for my boss and he said, oh, libertarian wouldn't fit on our station. You know, we're a leftist or progressive talk. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm
that's where you need a libertarian.
Yeah, I'm to the left of Nancy Pelosi on many
things. Come on, don't you guys believe in the fairness doctrine?
You know, Nancy Pelosi's a warmonger. I'm like a real liberal, like a peace-loving guy who happens to carry guns. I'm like one of those 60s hippies that, you know, came back from Vietnam, carries a loaded rifle in his trunk, but, you know, loves peace. That's me. So, you know, I was talking to this guy, and it's like, This company owns 7 stations. They have like a left wing station, a right wing station, talk station, and then 4 music stations on various formats. And I said, you know what you should pitch to your boss? I said, there are at least, you know, between us and Free Talk Live, there's 5 hours of live libertarian programming a day. You should take the music station that's doing the worst and turn it into a libertarian talk station and then fill it in with some gardening shows or something. And he's like, yeah, that won't happen.
It would work, though.
It would work, especially in the Pacific Northwest.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
wish you were dead, or locked up down in some jail. Cause if you were dead, you'd be underground and not squeaking under my friends.
Hi, Dobby.
That was dark.
That was the lyrics to the song that Loop is from. That was my band Bomb. I was a dark young man. All right, so if a pistolero is a guy who carries and uses a pistol, what were the other words? A pistolabra. What is a pistolabra?
A pistolabra is like a stand that carries multiple pistols and points them up in the air so that on each night of Passover, you can fire a gun into the air.
Yeah, I like having multiple guns. It's kind of, you know, they say, beware of the man with one gun, for he knows how to use it, which is kind of a, there's some accuracy to that, too. I think, you know, there are people, a lot of guns that know how to use them, too. But I think a lot of people spend a lot more money on guns than on practice or training. But I like having more than one gun. It's kind of like you can wake up in the morning and, you know, it's kind of like deciding which tie to put on, you know, which gun will I carry today? I guess sure. You could color coordinate if you had enough. Do you do that with knives?
Do I color coordinate knives? No, the one I carry now is orange, although I do wear a lot of orange. So maybe sort of.
Because you sell the Bitcoin t-shirts and they're all orange.
You know what? I guess I have to take that back. I did buy this knife because it was orange, because I wear a lot of orange. And so, yes, I do color coordinate with my knives.
So read this epic thing we got about democracy, republics, and constitutional republics. This is going to be our we stop shooting the breeze for a minute and actually talk about what we believe. But it's kind of funny, too. We got this thing today. I got it and posted it on Facebook, and it got 100 shares or something. And, you know, normally I wouldn't have wanted to read this on the air, but I guess it passed the sniff test of the internet. So go ahead and read this, please, Donnie.
So this is Facebook approved. You've all heard the expression, democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. But this meme takes it a little further. It goes on to say that a republic is a democracy where 200 wolves and 100 lambs elect two wolves and one lamb as their representative to vote on what to have for lunch.
Yep.
And then it goes on to say that a constitutional republic is a republic with a constitution guaranteeing that the lamb is not on the lunch menu until the Supreme Court rules 5 wolves to 4 lambs that mutton is different than lamb.
You know, I hear a lot of people say America's not a democracy, it's a republic. And they say that like it's the answer to a question when people usually aren't asking the question. It's usually when people say, well, America's a democracy, you know, which basically means I should have the right to do whatever I want to you if I could get some of my friends to say the same thing. And, you know, a republic doesn't really protect you for that. You just demonstrated that with this Supreme Court thing. When people say we got to get back to, you know, we have to restore the republic, it's like a republic doesn't, it's not necessarily a good thing. You know, when you say America is a republic, like you're proud of that fact. Let's name some other republics. Iran, Syria,
China, North Korea.
I wanted that one. North Korea.
Oh, sorry. I take that back.
The USSR was a republic.
Yeah.
There's more. Aren't there more? Most of the Middle East are, well,
Star Wars.
A lot of the Middle East are republics, except the ones that are fiefdoms, you know, with a king.
I mean, it's just the hip thing to call your country. The People's Democratic Democratic Republic of wherever.
Yeah, and when people are proud of the fact that we can vote for the wolves that decide what the sheep should do, they have elections in Iran. They have elections in China. They're probably a little less fairly carried out than the ones here.
Well, how would we know? It's not like we can audit the voting machines.
It's not like we get to audit the voting machines in China, although I'm sure a lot of components of our voting machines are made in China.
So we just have a more established electoral system, and so it appears the illusion of choice has much more fanfare.
Yeah, every once in a while I hear about people using blockchain technology to have like unalterable and open voting on politics, and I'm like, that is so square, man. Taking the newest technology that proves you don't need that replaces the need for government or any services government could provide.
You could register your prison number on a blockchain too.
There you go. Register your guns on the blockchain so the government knows. To register your guns these days, you just post a picture of yourself with your gun smiling on Facebook. That's my theory.
Worms.
You register a gun when you put a picture of it with yourself on the internet. If you didn't hear that, I'll say it one more time. Don't put pictures of yourself with your guns on your internets. All right, hour two coming up.
Hey, this is some Squiskar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Purr.
Purr. Definitely purr.
Purr. It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. Broadcasting live and worldwide from a... live and... I can't sing like that. Live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. This is hour two of our nighttime show, and we got Davi Barker, the shiny badger. Are you safe, sir?
I am safe. I've not been contacted by the government.
Good. Me neither. I hate it when they contact you. They're annoying. They think that their shiny badges grant special rights. Huh.
Serious. And they want me to thank them all the time just for carrying a badge around.
Thank you for your service for arresting me. Yeah. So speaking of liberty, there's this guy in Wyoming that I dig named Boston Tea Party. He wrote a book called Mulan Labe. It's a... Is it a spoiler alert to say what happened in a book that was written many years ago?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's basically... Wyoming becomes a libertarian minarchist paradise. It's a pretty fun book. It was an influence on me to want to move to Wyoming and like liberty. But what really took me to liberty in one sitting was Boston's book, You and the Police, which is a thin volume about how to deal with police stops and other things too, like, you know, how to not get pulled over in the first place. You know, he basically says, I mean, common sense stuff, but things like, Have your registration up to date. Don't have a bunch of crap in the backseat of your car. Don't have things dangling from your mirror. Have your car clean, you know, well, clean it once in a while. Have it not look like, you know, a dirtbag's car. And the book kind of blew my mind. Here's how I got it. Was my wife and I got guns because someone tried to break in our house in California. And we bought a shotgun. I bought a book on shotguns. When I bought it on Amazon, it said, people who bought this book also bought, and one was You and the Police by Boston Tea Party. And I bought it and got it, and I read it in one sitting and woke my wife up early the next morning and said, honey, we're moving to Wyoming. And I really liked the book because it was something I'd never encountered before. Because, you know, I've seen books back in the day that were about how to avoid the police, but they were written for, like, drug dealers and bikers and people that... the cops would look at and think, you're a criminal. And I could tell from reading this book that the guy writing it was kind of square in a good way. I'm not saying that as an insult. He's kind of a straight arrow. He's a total libertarian, but he was talking about things like, you know, how to carry a gun in a state where, you know, regard, like, not telling you to break the law, but basically saying, like, I don't know if this would work, but it was a suggestion that was kind of interesting of, like, carry your handgun, you know, carry your sidearm in an open lockable briefcase on the seat next to you. And if you get pulled over while you're getting pulled over, you know, practice this, like, before you get pulled over, shutting the briefcase and locking it, because a cop opening a locked briefcase needs, you know, more cause. It's not something he could just do for a Terry search, which is a Terry pat down, which is something that cops have been determined to legally be allowed to do when they are standing next to you to see that you don't have a weapon. But
is that because they need a warrant or something to break a lock?
Yeah. Yeah. Or an exigent circumstance. But it was kind of bizarre to me. It was like this kind of like Boy Scout kind of guy, like Eagle Scout kind of guys telling you how to illegally, you know, how to carry a gun without getting arrested. And I'm like, this is mine. It was mind blowing to me. You know, it was an honest person who shouldn't be ever considered a criminal telling people how to not become a criminal. I'd never encountered anything like that. And, you know, the cop block guys and all the stuff, all the videos that the young hipster guys from New Hampshire do, it's all based on this book. They don't ever say it, but it is. You can tell this book came out way before those guys were doing that stuff. And they're kind of verbatim saying what this book says about cop stops. I have become a fan of his books. I've read all his books. I've actually become a friend of the guy. We've emailed a bunch and I've hung out with him. And he's a really, really smart, interesting, intense, brilliant cat. Now, when I did the interview with Stefan Molyneux 2 years ago, I asked him something. I didn't have time to go back and check this today. I've had a really busy day. We're in the process of getting ready to move the Freedom Fiends entire thing over to another web host that's on a dedicated server, which is not as easy as it would sound. It takes a bunch of work. So I was busy doing all that today. I didn't have time to go listen to this interview. But Boston emailed me today and said that he listened to that interview finally, and that I said something in there. I paraphrased Boston in his attitude about guns. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but I think it was something like, you know, Boston Tea Party says that, you know, I was asking Molyneux what he thought about guns. And I said something like, you know, Boston Tea Party says that you're not a real libertarian, or you're not an effective libertarian if you don't carry guns. And what say you, Mr. Molyneux? And he did. I do remember that he like changed the subject and didn't really answer and didn't really address it. And it turns out we've recently come to discover that Mr. Stefan Molyneux hates guns and hates self-defense. And there's a video on the True Shibes Mirror of him basically saying, why would you need self-defense? In my, you know, basically saying people shouldn't need guns if they abide by my ideals, so I don't carry one.
You know, that was one of the very earliest things where I had to just disagree with him and move on before he really started saying wacky things, because it was in a video about self-defense, and his argument was, or his statement on the subject was something to the effect of, you know, before you get into theory, you have to work empirically. So look around you, and you know, the vast majority of us don't see violence in our day-to-day lives. And, you know, I can't think, there's no violence in my life.
That's the Molyneux video. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is a guy who has spent the last 1,000 episodes telling me about the violence in his childhood.
Yeah. And he's a guy who basically spends all his time sequestered in his mini mansion in Canada, you know, I wouldn't say bullying, but like, you know, yeah, kind of like psychologically bullying teenagers into giving up their lunch money, you know, so he's safe.
But, you know, violence came to me in public schools. It wasn't like my parenting, and it wasn't the state. It was ethnic gangs in my middle school that were beating me up because I'm white.
Yeah. And I've had a knife to my throat, man. Just walking down the street.
I have, I guess the closest I've been to real violence was, there was a guy who was going to do a drive-by on the house that I was living in. And he convinced them not to because I lived there. He was going after someone else that lived in the house, and they decided against it because they were afraid they might hit me by mistake.
And
he told me that later.
Ethical gangbanger.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tense scenario. Essentially, this guy called the cops on him and got his apartment raided. And so he was going to get his crew together and shoot up the house.
Yeah.
And so they were literally parked out in front of the house, and they were ready and armed, and he decided not to because I was home.
Well, that's a problem with most gangsters and a lot of libertarians who, you know, murmur about it's time to start shooting. You know, like most of those people don't know how to use a rifle. So if they're going to actually use a gun on someone, they have to either drive by and spray everybody in the vicinity, or they have to walk up to somebody and shoot them with a handgun. You know, you know, rifles can take people out at 700 yards. And I'm not encouraging this. I'm just saying, like, Wyoming is full of people, you know, they can shoot a deer at 700 yards. And if you can shoot a deer at 700 yards, you are a lethal person to someone who you're really determined to do harm to. Because it's
but my point is that the violence didn't come at me from my family. It came at me from the world. It wasn't an indication of some flaw in my upbringing. It was the world I lived in.
Yeah. And I also don't know what carrying a handgun would do against a surprise drive-by on a house. But so let's read this thing that Boston sent of really what his real attitude about guns and liberty is. That I paraphrased badly, and I'm saying this as a correction. I've actually posted this on the Molyneux interview from 2 years ago, but I wanted to read it tonight on the next show after he sent me this. And we're on in Wyoming, where a lot of his friends and listeners probably live. I don't know. Wyoming is a pretty Boston Tea Party kind of state. I'll say that. So, would you read this statement from Mr. Tea Party?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. Thank you. So libertarian philosophy is, in the end, moot if its adherents have no final resort of armed defense, and freedom has usually required the shedding of blood on battlefields. If history has taught us anything, it's that liberty is won and maintained by riflemen. As Heinlein once wrote, the price of freedom is the willingness to do sudden battle anywhere, anytime, and with utter recklessness. Willingness to do sudden battle implies capability to do sudden battle. You must already have the tools, training, and practice to fight effectively. When you are capable and willing to fight, then you have options. When you are capable and willing to fight, then your enemy will perhaps fear and avoid you, but not until then. If you do not have, right now, an FAL, M1, M1A, or HK91, then there is something you have chosen not to own for your freedom. If you do own such a rifle but cannot right now from offhand position hit a dinner plate at 100 yards within 5 seconds on demand without fail, then there is a skill you have chosen not to learn for your freedom. If you are not a rifleman right now, then you have announced to the world that your commitment to liberty goes only just so far. If you will not spend a summer and the price of a used jet ski to become a rifleman, to become a deadly foe of tyranny, then you are just mouthing platitudes, treating liberty as a hobby and expecting brave men to do your fighting for you. If you are not a rifleman, you are just a hobbyist. By choosing to move to a state where you can't become a rifleman, a hobbyist is what you'll remain. The NERF and egghead libertarians don't like hearing this, obviously, but facts are stubborn facts. This is a quote. The state that separates its scholars from its warriors will have its thinking done by cowards and its fighting done by fools. And that's a quote from Thucydides. Sorry, how did you pronounce
Thucydides,
that?
Thucydides, I think it was.
Thucydides, he's a Greek or a Roman historian. Free State Project members in New Hampshire without battle rifles are like libertarians in Manhattan without handguns. All are at the mercy of any determined band of thugs. If you're not a rifleman in the country or a pistolero in the city, then you're merely food waiting to be eaten. You can scream no, no initiation of force all the way down.
No initiation of force. No initiation of force.
All the way down your aggressor's gullet. Big deal. All fish wiggle when they're caught.
Man, that is some powerful writing. And, you know, that's why I like that guy and don't really care about when people say, you know, Chris Catwell is amazing. Have you heard what he wrote about aggression? And I'm like, man, Boston said it better, you know, 15 years ago. And Boston can shoot a dinner plate at more than 100 yards. I've seen him do it.
Cantwell can shoot his thigh at 100 yards.
He can shoot his thigh at 5 yards.
With Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow. purr very well.
Yep. One of these days I'm going to collect it all up and make myself a purr coat.
Purr coat. Take off your hair suit. Isn't that from the Bible?
I don't know.
About wearing a hair suit, like for self-flagellation, you know, like a suit made of human hair.
Is that like a coat of arms?
I don't know. It kind of sounds like something a serial killer would have as a trophy, but it's in the Bible somewhere in the back. So we're talking about self-defense. So you made a comment to me during the break about, you know, you didn't think it was necessarily true. It was like, tell me what you said about gold and guns.
Yeah. So this is, if you ever see the voluntarist or anarcho-capitalist flag, like all the sort of different brands of anarchy have their favorite color, and the capitalist color flag is black and yellow. And they say that the reason that yellow was chosen is because it symbolizes gold, which is the currency of the free market. And that has always struck me as kind of like wrong because
you should remake it. And instead of that part being yellow, you should make it just black and white, zero and ones for Bitcoin.
Black and white zeros and ones
for Bitcoin. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's more the currency of the anarcho-capitalist. But that's the same.
That doesn't solve the problem because
it's
like
fetishizing the thing rather than the free commerce.
Right. That's sort of my point. And so I actually, what I did was I change it. When I describe it to people, I say that it's gold because it's the golden rule.
Okay.
And so the black symbolizes non-aggression and the gold symbolizes the golden rule. All right. That's what I say. But the point is that, yeah, there's nothing magical about the element gold. If a market doesn't want gold and chooses to use something else, there's no like violation of free market principles if they decide they want to use copper or silver or beans or wheat or whatever, or Bitcoin. And so to make a monument of gold in your symbol is sort of like defeating the purpose. And so I got that same impression from this statement from Boston Tea Party that I absolutely agree with the necessity for self-defense and the willingness to defend yourself. But pistols and rifles are merely the tools of the day. They may not be the right tool for the situation that you're in. And at some point in the future, they may not be the most efficient tool for home defense. So I guess for me, the principle is more important than the item itself.
Yeah. And I do believe that. Well, I'm not going to say what Boston meant. I don't want to paraphrase him again and have to do another correction. But I will say for me that I think that the idea of being willing to defend yourself is probably more important than the weapon you're doing it with. I mean, I would, you know, Ben Stone has told me many times he would fear far more somebody with a knife who knows how to use it than someone with a gun who's not very good using it.
And, oh, yeah, me too.
And, you know, I was talking to a woman the other day, a friend of mine, telling her that I thought she should learn guns and carry a gun for self-defense. And she's like, well, I don't really like guns, but I carry some less than lethal self-defense, you know, meaning like mace or a stun gun or something. And, and I really, there's a lot of gun people who kind of fetishize guns, who hate the idea of a woman carrying mace, you know, instead of a gun. But I think it's far better than carrying nothing. First of all, it's a method of self-defense. Second of all, it gives you the idea that you don't just have to roll over to the demands of an aggressor. And I think that's the most important component of self-defense right there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you Google this, you Google the phrase auditing shooting rampage statistics. I've done an analysis of over 100 shootings of schools or malls or courthouses or whatever, and compared the number of deaths when the shooter is stopped by a police officer and the number of deaths when the shooter is stopped by a civilian. And the difference is like it's 2.4 people on average when it's stopped by a civilian. It's like 18.4 when it's stopped by a police officer.
And sometimes they're stopped by a civilian with no weapon tackling them.
Yeah.
Who's just willing to defend. You know,
and it's merely the willingness to intervene that saves more than an average of 10 lives in that situation.
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, like every time there's a school shooting, it seems the government comes out with a new training film for teachers and office workers. And it basically tells you to duck and cover. It basically uses the same self-defense ideology, you know, for an active shooter bent on killing everybody that they used for a nuclear weapon during the Cold War. And it's probably about as effective.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, like, it's funny. We talked about heroism a couple weeks ago. This kind of comes down to the necessity for heroism as a value, as a virtue in a free society.
I want to live for a long time, but, you know, I've had a good run. I'm 50. I would, if I were unarmed and someone came in with a gun, I would probably at least have the impulse to want to tackle them, even if it meant me dying. That's not heroic. That's self-preservation, man.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Meow, 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 meow.
So it's the Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. I'm the Iron Hamster. Over there we got Davy Barker, the Shiny Hamster. No, the Shiny Badger.
What would it sound like if a cat had Tourette's syndrome?
I don't want to think about sick kitties. I love kitties. All right, so my cat Charlie's getting old. She's 16. I'm starting to think about cat mortality a lot. I've never had a cat die. Charlie's brother was hit by a car, but it wasn't my cat. It was my neighbor's cat. Charlie was her cat at the time, and I picked her cat up off the middle of the road, and it was dead, and parts of it were hanging out, and I helped her bury it in the backyard. So I've dealt with a dead cat and almost, pretty much cried over a dead cat. But yeah, I've had Charlie since she was 3, and she's now 16, and I don't think she's that long for this world. I'm starting to sadly kind of prepare. My wife and I are preparing ourselves for that possibility. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's not very
happy.
That's no fun. But she's still purring up a storm. She's on my bed there purring up a storm. She's fine. But fine, but slow and limping, even though there's nothing they can do about that. So I was up on a ladder today in my bathroom cleaning the ceiling. You ever clean the ceiling of a bathroom?
Not of a bathroom. I cleaned the ceiling of an office when my mom quit smoking.
Yeah, this was nicotine stains, but we quit smoking like a year ago. We just had kind of been like not looking up in the bathroom. We're like, we're not going to look at that. I told someone about this today and they said, I thought only Italians smoked in the bathroom. Was that you?
No, that was not me.
Somebody else has said that to me. Like,
I thought it was common to smoke in the bathroom.
Well, when you chain smoke, it's common to smoke pretty much anywhere you go. So yeah, you take
maybe I'm just thinking of high school. In high school, it was common to smoke in the bathroom.
Yeah, but in your home, it's like, you take a shower, it's all full of steam. There's steam drops forming on the ceiling. You get your towel, then you go get your cigarette, then you go back in there and, shave while smoking or whatever. And, years of doing that, you end up with these, it looks like frozen, syrup drops on the ceiling, like brown syrup. They're really gross. And
that is an excellent description.
And they're hard to get off. I had to get up there with a butter. First I took a butter knife and scraped off as much as I could. Then I took this green cleanser, stuff that wouldn't poison me too much that actually worked really well, and sprayed it and just kept scrubbing. It took me about 45 minutes to an hour to do the whole ceiling.
When I did it, I got a really intense nicotine buzz because I just absorbed so much of it through my hands.
Because you weren't much of a smoker, yeah.
Well, I was 13.
I am such a vapor that, it didn't, I didn't even notice. I was probably vaping while doing it. But I was up there listening to Stranglehold by Ted Nugent on my iPod on repeat because it's a great song. And I started to think about it. I was thinking Stefan Molyneux. Oh, everyone's turning off their pods right now. They're like, oh, not this again. But I'm not really going to talk about Stefan Molyneux and what's wrong with him, except for this. And it's going to segue into more like the post-game wrap-up of what the whole thing about this guy, Stefan Molyneux, the most popular anarcho-capitalist there is, the fact that it's turning out that A, it sounds like he's getting Tourette's and just starting to like spout stuff that doesn't make any sense and contradicts things. And B,
what would an anarchist with Tourette syndrome sound like?
Free market. And B, you know, he's kind of not walking his talk. And C, it looks a lot like he's running a cult. And D, he hates guns, and that's not very libertarian. And he hates self-defense, and he thinks you should just hand your wallet and your car keys to the mugger. He said that. Okay, so I was thinking.
He said that?
Yeah, that's in that video, man. I think we're going to need to play that. Do you want to read my stuff on Molyneux, the Ted Nugent thing of anarchism, while I find this quote from him?
Yeah, let me pull that up.
Yeah.
Stefan Molyneux is the Ted Nugent of anarcho-capitalism. Now, what's funny about this is I don't really know that much about Ted Nugent, but I'll just read what you've written. So, yeah. Stefan Molyneux is the Ted Nugent of anarcho-capitalism. Everyone knows both their names, except me, apparently. I knew their names. Both wrote one great song years ago. Both their songs borrowed heavily from others, and they both talk about personal liberty, but mix in a ton of other crazy S.
Yeah.
Guano S, as you say here. but unlike Ted, Stefan actually does things that contradict his high moral stance.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever noticed that there are a lot of people whose three favorite libertarians are Molly, Cantwell, and Larkin? Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do so many atheist anarchists love to worship great men, especially such flawed great men? I don't get it. But that's a whole nother discussion. You want to know about Ted Nugent and what he means.
Yeah, tell me about him. I know he's a musician, right? And I know he's gotten criticized for, or at least made fun of, for things he said about Obama. But I hadn't heard about him until making fun of him became the hip thing.
Well, I've been into him since the 70s. You know, he put out some records back then. His big hit was Cat Scratch Fever, which is kind of a goofy song. But he also wrote this song called Stranglehold, which is a great song. And when I say he wrote one great song years ago, and it borrowed heavily. I mean, it didn't borrow any more heavily than any other rock songs borrow from other songs, but it was actually kind of groundbreaking guitar playing in it. It was pretty cool. But the thing is, he is known for that song, but he didn't sing that song. He wrote it, but like his bass player is the singer on it. So the thing he's known the most for, he's not even the singer on. And Molyneux said, you know, basically did some videos on anarchism and why the government is bad. You know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and they were great. They would still kind of be classics if it weren't for the fact that, you know, his moralism is coming from a very morally flawed person. All right, here is his video. I finally queued it up through the ad about self-defense.
So I don't know anybody who's ever used any physical violence, again, except for my own family. And I have never myself used any form of physical violence that was intended, that was not just, wrong place, wrong time, you and my elbow. So I guess what I'm saying is that I've never had any need for self-defense. And I would bet that most of the people listening to this have also never had any need for self-defense. I mean, if someone did come up and I don't know, like stick a knife in my back and say, give me your wallet, I'd be like, yeah, here's my wallet. You want the keys to my car? Here's my wedding ring. I mean, anything. I mean, that's just stuff that can be replaced. Who cares, right? But I mean, a perforated spleen is probably something that is a little trickier to repair than, you know, a call to the insurance company or whatever. So I do understand the theory that, you know, violence is bad except for self-defense, except for the kind of not-so-minor fact that I've never actually seen self-defense in operation. And I do.
What a buffoon, man.
I think, is this because he's Canadian?
It is probably because he's Canadian, but
I mean, come on. It's not, I mean, he's so obtuse. It's not like the only kinds of aggression are asking to steal your wallet.
Yeah.
Like, people get beat up for bigoted reasons. People get like sexual assault and rape. You know, like there are lots of instances. Maybe, I mean, he must live in some sort of weird, like Canadian ivory tower.
Well,
or
he lives in, I've seen pictures of his house in his neighborhood, and I'm not going to point anyone to him because I don't want to drop docs on anyone, but he lives in a mini mansion in a pretty nice neighborhood. It looks like it could be a gated community, but I don't think it is, but pretty much all of Canada looks like that. But he lives in a, you know, particularly nice, like, I'm amazed that he lives in the kind of house he does, and he's like berating people for not donating enough. Like, That is, it's it. He is.
He's got a house payment.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's living in a house that I don't know what it costs in Canada, but you know, in the San Francisco Bay Area, it would cost about $3 million. In you know, Casper, Wyoming, it would probably cost you, you know, $500,000 to $750,000. And he's like berating money out of teenagers who are living in squalor. I know that for a fact. I know people who live in squalor who are teenagers who were teenagers and giving him money and feeling they had to.
But the thing is, it's just like, how can you not? How can you think that because you don't see a lot of physical violence in your rich neighborhood, that that means the majority of the people listening to you on the internet, just nothing, no aggression ever happens in anybody's life?
Yeah.
And for that matter, if it was the custom, if it was the custom that we lived in a stateless society and there was no police force and people just handed over their wallets and their car keys because someone was holding a knife on them, well, guess what? You're just incentivizing that behavior now.
Yeah.
So that's going to become much more common, which means you don't have... You don't have investment in property, though. I mean,
you know, it's amazing to me that Cantwell sticks up for this guy. I heard him on Free Talk Live a week or two ago saying like, oh, all these people are saying bad stuff about him, but I think he's a good guy and I like his videos and he says good stuff. And I'm like, okay, first of all, Cantwell is very much a, if you don't own a gun, you're not a real libertarian kind of guy. And B, Cantwell is very much, you know, thin libertarianism is the only libertarianism, which I kind of feel about too. I don't feel like the non-aggression principle is the only principle to operate your life on. I also feel like you should be decent to people.
Well, that's funny. To me, those are contradictions.
What do you mean?
If you don't own a gun, you're not a real libertarian. Thin libertarianism is the only kind of liberty. Well, it sounds like you have a gun ownership, thick libertarianism.
Yeah. okay. But I see that now. But, you know, the thing is, like, you know, if you don't like thick libertarians, you know, ones that have a lot of agendas other than the non-aggression principle, Stefan Molyneux is like the thickest thick libertarian there is, because you know, he doesn't only have like, you know, it's not like someone who's, oh, you need to be a feminist and a libertarian to be a real libertarian. It's like to be a Molyneux libertarian, you have to like digest his, you know, lengthy book on his new flawed retelling of the universe of universally preferable behavior. Initialize that into everything you do, leave your family and like, you know, eight other things, you know, not have tattoos, not wear high heels, not wear makeup if you're a woman, not like Family Guy, not laugh at crass jokes, you know,
I mean, give up drugs and promiscuous sex. I know that's part of it.
Yeah. He's like,
you can't be into violent video games.
He kind of sounds like the Saudi Arabia of libertarianism.
I have often thought that he is like the like Christian sort of social conservative of the anarchist movement.
But he's an atheist.
Yeah.
And it's weird too that, you know, for someone that says, for when people say he's not running a cult, it's a lot of his followers certainly act like he's running a cult. Like people who have dismissed him have recently gotten death threats for saying bad things about him. And I have had people argue at me long and hard on the internet of like, no, he's good. I don't care. You know, it's kind of like, but my cult leader was nice kind of thing.
You know, we often say that, that, you know, the machinations of history are not the actions of great men, but the actions of like a great multitude of decentralized actors. Right. So I wonder if it's the same of a cult. What if it turns out that cults are not even created by their charismatic leaders, but actually created by their followers. And the charismatic leaders just happen to be in the right place at the right time.
Could be. I don't think it is in this case, but that's a component of it for sure. All right, one more coming up.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Have you recently defooed a cult that demands constant devotion to a figurehead? The guy who claims to be anti-IP, but uses IP to silence critics? That charming gentleman who thinks all your problems are from bad parenting? If you're tired of tithing to messiahs who demand a lot of your money, consider donating to the Freedom Fiends. We're more fun and don't require constant praise. In fact, we don't even like audience involvement. We talk, you listen, if you want. And if you send us a dollar, we won't complain. We'll dig it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, with Dobby Parker, Freedom Fiend. So, this last segment short, Dobby was going to talk extensively about how Stefan Molyneux has jumped the shark, and what were you going to say? Encapsulate it really quick.
I just, you know, I am a old school fan of Molyneux, like, and I've been listening for a long time. And so when I go to his channel and I read the titles, I'm like, wow, like, this is a great title, you know? Like, here it is.
The titles used to deliver on what he was saying, and now they don't. They're just link bait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's link baiting.
And then putting passive aggressive, like, bashes of his critics in without mentioning their name.
So this is the funny thing. There's two videos in the last week. One is "What is an argument?" And the other is "Jennifer Lawrence nude celebrity photos hacked." And they're both
responses
the doxing scandal, but neither one of them acknowledges the doxing,
which is
scandal.
Really weird, because it's absolutely being passive aggressive and not addressing your accusers. In a really weird circuitous, what's the word? You know, like going around, going around the reality of it kind of way. Like, the guy will not tell the truth and acknowledge, you know, all the scandal going on around him.
But this isn't what I mean by jumping the shark. What I mean is, like, the video that uploaded today, it was called "The Antidote to Cruelty." And that's, like, I like that title. I would love to see, like, a really concise 10-minute video of Molyneux.
You'd like to see him eight years ago with a video like that, because he'd really deliver.
A video 8 years ago that was 10 minutes long with that title would have been a fantastic Molyneux video. But today, it's a two-hour-long video. It's a call-in show, and there's probably only one or two sentences that have anything to do with that topic.
Yeah, it's him trying to be Dr. Phil.
And so it's link bait, and I'm like, you know, I was excited to hear you to hear your thoughts on this subject, and instead I have to wade through this call-in show.
And a lot of it's begging for money too, right?
I don't know.
So real quick, that's kind of a minor. That's a beef, and it's a, you know, it's why I say, why would anyone listen to the guy even without, you know, him silencing critics and possibly running a cult? But here's the real meat I want to get to, the like kind of post game wrap up. Not saying I'll never mention it again, but I'm not going to do all Molyneux all the time episodes anymore. But this is important to me because, okay, I talked to you and Ben the other day in our Bavarian Gulch episode that's not recorded. One of the things we talked about was I came to you guys with this kind of fear, which was basically, if after all this stuff came out, this guy still stays the most popular libertarian in the world, you know, the face of liberty to people outside the community, then the statists are right and libertarianism will never work because the free market can't take care of itself in the liberty bubble, and because because people are too stupid, even smart people are too stupid to recognize snake oil when they see it.
Molyneux is a market failure. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
That he's successful and that is a failure of the market. That's what I said. And what did you say were the silver linings of that?
So there's a couple. One is, I mean, we have always said that a free society or a voluntarist society would accept communists. And if communists want to get together on their own property and build a commune and share everything and, you know, whatever, they're free to do that. But
I think they should all. But if they all just move into his mini mansion and don't go on the internet, I'd be really happy.
The other side of the coin is that a whole bunch of people who believe in private property cannot form a marketplace in a communist society. And so this is proof that that the property society or the free market society is more tolerant than the socialist or communist one.
Okay.
And so we have, you know, in a free society, there would be room for crazy people with crazy ideas to get together in their own little societies and, you know, okay, not and real be very quick, critical real of quick, their charismatic leaders.
Real quick, what was your second point about first adopters?
Oh,
or first to market?
that the person who's first to market in any industry often enjoys a pseudo monopoly for a little while before the barriers to entry sort of are justified by the competitive advantage. So, you know, when Liberty Dollar came out, people had problems with it, but there was nobody really competing with it, and so it effectively had a monopoly. But the moment that the grievances outweigh the profit motive, or the profit motive outweighs the grievances, it's dispersed, it's distributed, and dozens of little Molyneux will erupt that resolve the objections that people have. There will be
talk therapy in Liberty, but it'll be better. And here's the silver lining I got out of it really quick was I decided that he's the canary in the coal mine for friendship. If a person is still defending Molyneux like they're defending their mother after all that's come out, I will defoo them out of my life. And I did. I posted that on Facebook today and got rid of about 100 friends and made about 70 new ones that are better. So that's what I got out of it. It's the acid test for rational thinking if you defend that guy still like you defend your mother. All right, we'll be back on Saturday interviewing Jeff Berwick with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and I. Will be a good show. Worms.
Worms.